This is Out of School, a show about the intersection of technology and education. This is episode 22. My name is Bradley Chambers, and Frazier is actually out of town this week speaking. So I have a guest today, Cole Conrad from Gestalt Community Schools in Memphis, Tennessee. This episode is sponsored by MindVault. We'll have more about them as the show goes on, but you can also find them on the web at mindvaultapp.com. Cole, how's it going this week?
Good. How are you, Bradley?
Good, good. This will be our first full week back at school since Christmas. We were off last Monday for Martin Luther King Day, which always kind of blows my mind because when Frazier and I talk, he doesn't like, you know, they obviously on a different kind of holiday schedule than us. We're like, we just assume that every school in America is generally closed for Martin Luther King Day. Obviously, Martin Luther King doesn't mean as much to people in Scotland. It's an American icon. But so then Friday, there was the threat of ice. And while Memphis, from what I understand, actually does get winter weather, we always just have the threat of it because we have so many mountains around us that it generally just like stops everything. And so, yeah, we had like they were thinking it was going to be the worst ice storm in the history of man, and we had nothing. And it's always kind of the joke that, the grocery stores are in collusion with the meteorologists because literally every public and private school, like within our viewing distance of our news stations, was closed and there was nothing.
Yep. I get that feeling. My wife's father works at Walmart as a manager, and he said they always sell out of three things immediately whenever there's a threat of ice here. Pop-Tarts, water, and I can't remember what the third thing was. I know Pop-Tarts and water. It's crazy to me, as somebody from Ohio, how crazy it can get with just ice or snow. But we don't have the equipment to handle it. So,
well, yeah, that's the key. I've got some friends on Twitter, Dave Kalo from the unofficial Apple weblog, and we kind of joke, they can have 4 inches of snow and still go to school. If we have 4 inches of snow, like, we're out for a week. I never understood like kind of the run on groceries. Like, are people like that? Do they not keep enough food in the house to make it like 3 or 4 days? I mean, we go to the store like every other week. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same way here. I don't quite understand it. Plus, I don't get that worried about it. If it gets that bad, I'll be able to drive in it. So I never freak out, but I know a lot of people do. It's pretty crazy.
One of the things that Frazier and I have kind of talked about discussing in a future show is kind of like the technology that we use to cancel school nowadays. Because I like when you and I were growing up, like you just had to watch the news ticker like on the TV. Like that's all you had.
Yep.
And now it's like, you know, you got Twitter updates. Like we actually do like a mass phone call. We post it on Twitter and Facebook and do a mass email. And oddly enough, we'll still have kids show up from time to time on a closing. And we're kind of like, how did you not hear? I mean, we had it like – other than actually driving to your house, that was everything we could do.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Up until I started at Gestalt, we were still, because we were one school before Gestalt formed, and we'll get into that in a minute, but basically they used to use a phone tree. So they had a phone tree with all the parents, and Yetta, the principal, would just make a call, and it would go out from there before we started utilizing technology to kind of handle it all.
Yeah, that's just one of the ways that we've begun to use technology day to day, not necessarily to talk about technology, but like to actually use it. So it's kind of interesting. Yeah, that'll be a future show, kind of like the tools that we use. So Frazier will be back next week. So you're my host this week. So kind of, you know, my thoughts here, which, you know, you've got a pretty cool situation in Memphis. I know there's been a lot of changes with the public school system up there in the number of recent years. And I really just want to kind of hear y'all's story and how did you come about? And then we'll talk about the technology you guys use as well. So kind of tell us about it.
Sure. So Gestalt Community Schools opened up in July of 2011. But we were founded originally, or we kind of formed out of a single school, Power Center Academy here in Memphis. And Power Center Academy opened in 2008 in the middle of a lot of the economic crisis and a lot going on with business and entrepreneurship, especially in the area that the school was opened. That's the reason it was opened, was to try to target entrepreneurship within that community. As just kind of a core principle of the school, along with everything that comes with just regular education, like your regular math, science, reading, those type of things. There was also a dedicated business class that just discussed what business is, how you can start one. They were given, the scholars were given projects to basically build their own business. And actually, we've got some scholars that with some of the future buildings that we're going to be opening, we are working with them to start their business within the building. So Power Center was really formed with that business mindset, being kind of at the center, and it showed incredible growth throughout the first year. And I came to get involved with Power Center, through a consulting group. They were a client of mine. At the time, the technology was just being supported outside by consulting, which says a lot about the internal staff, because the school opened with a one-to-one model. So they had one-to-one MacBooks on day one, and they still were able to be supported by a consulting group for the first, I want to say it was the first 2 years. And so after a couple years of great success with Power Center, and a lot of that can be read online. If I say it, I'm probably going to flub it up. But there was so much success with Power Center that there was a need for more schools throughout the city of Memphis. And that's why Gestalt Community Schools was formed and opened. And I got hired away from the consulting group to be the IT director and take what we've done with Power Center Academy and replicate it with any other schools that we open, along with trying to innovate and find, you know, the best ways to utilize technology. Because one of our big goals is to be able to be replicatable once we really know the path. We're still definitely in the stages of figuring certain aspects out, especially the technology model, because a one-to-one model can sometimes not be easily sustainable or replicatable. So that's kind of how Gestalt got started, was out of Power Center Academy. And it's been a crazy year and a half.
Yeah, I think that the replicatable model is interesting, because, you know, you look at, you know, that in say Chattanooga, even the, look at the private schools there, you know, there's not one kind of model. Of course, we're all different organizations, but each of them kind of have their own model. We use different things for, you know, wireless. We use different things for, you know, technology. We use different kind of whiteboards. We use different vendors for custodial services, different vendors for food. And so it's like you figure out what works, and you just kind of reproduce it around the town. And then there's kind of like that uniform model.
Yep. Yep. And that's this year has been our first foray into that. As it's been the first time that we've opened a whole separate campus. We have the middle school, Power Center Academy Middle School, started with sixth grade. And it grew a grade level per year. And that's typically the way we approach things. We start with one grade level and grow it. That definitely has worked well for us. And now we're at 10th grade. So we've got some of our founding scholars from 2008 that are now in the 10th grade. And so that campus grew, and a high school was formed out of that on the same campus. But this year with Gordon Science and Arts Academy, we opened a whole new campus this last summer. Is crazy the way that it went, because we did a lot of conversion, a lot of standardization, for instance, from airports on every cart in every room that then have to be managed by our teachers if they're not working a lot of the time, to AeroHive. So we're now AeroHive across the network, and it's been so much better with that being our core wireless technology. So that's been the biggest thing that we've done with Gordon is replicating those things and seeing how it works. And actually, we set the foundation this last summer so that we could do that with certain technologies that we knew we couldn't replicate, such as the wireless and our phone system and things like that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's, you know, years ago, Apple really pushed the airports to their schools, and, you know, to put them on top of the carts, plug them into, I guess, a network jack in the classroom. But I guess they saw as, you know, the growth of their, you know, when it, you know, was less about, you know, 30 MacBooks in a school versus 30 MacBooks in a classroom, an airport really just doesn't hold its, you know, hold its weight. You know, those are, they're great for home routers, but there's a lot of kind of nitty gritty Wi-Fi technology that an enterprise access point is just going to do better than an airport. And so it's, you know, as any of our listeners will probably attest to, if you call Apple now and you're doing a one-to-one deployment, they're going to push you to Aerohive. They're a big Aerohive partner because it really, you know, from a teacher's perspective, if the iPad doesn't work right, but it's really the wireless's problem, to her, that's an iPad problem.
Yep.
And so it makes sense for Apple to partner with, you know, partner with somebody there. It's the same reason I think they pushed Jamf as a mobile device management solution rather than trying to push their profile manager with inline or Mountain Lion server.
Yeah, they definitely do. And it's funny that you bring Jamf up because we're also, we utilize them for all of our computer management. So we right now are at about 950 computers in rotation between the two campuses and the three schools. And we outgrew remote desktop last year for sure. It was a very frustrating, not this last school year. So actually it was the 2010 to 2011 school year. It was frustrating trying to push out software at that point to about 600 or 700 computers through remote desktop. It just tended to choke. So we started using the Casper suite this year, and that was one of our major overhauls that I put in place, and it has worked beautifully for what we needed it to do.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of those tools from Apple and remote desktop and then their profile manager, those are kind of like, you know, if you've got a smaller deployment, those work great. Like we still use remote desktop, but we don't have near the number of clients you guys do. I mean, it's one of those things where if you've got that many devices, you need to have a dedicated supported solution that's like built for that. Because even with our machines, I've seen the remote desktop just like it just stops working for whatever reason. You know, a software upgrade here goes hairy, and then like you can't ever get remote desktop to work again. And it's just like, and they haven't updated. They really haven't kept it updated.
Yeah, it's strange to me that they haven't, because it is a really great tool. Our teachers rely on it heavily. It's been one of the teaching points this year that I'm still working on, is teaching everybody the powerful tools that are available with remote desktop. But it's how our teachers actually keep track of, you know, 24 scholars at a time, when everybody's got their computer open, to make sure everybody's on task. And I don't know why it hasn't been updated. I think it's been probably at least 2 years since the last major update.
Yeah, I know they got an update around Mountain Lion's release, but I think that was really just a compatibility upgrade. And I've been using it, I think, since 2009 or early 2010. I guess it was early 2010, and like I don't think it's been really upgraded majorly since then.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But you know, in the smaller settings where you're in the hundreds of computers, it worked really well, like I said, for the first 2 to 3 years that PowerCenter was open. And once we crossed over a certain number, though, it just kind of stopped working as effectively.
So tell us, like, you know, you talk about replication. Tell us, like, if you are building a new school today, what kind of equipment goes in there? What's your firewall? What are your switches? What's your DHCP server? Obviously, we're you know, Aerohive is your wireless partner, but you know, what else kind of hardware are you using?
Sure. There's a pretty good gamut of different vendors involved. As of right now, we utilize SonicWall's as far as our firewall goes. And then we've got Cisco switches. We converted to Cisco last year from kind of flat networks with Netgear switches last year. And we standardized with some Cisco small, medium business class switches. We've got a vendor locally that I let kind of manage the setup and the networking, because that's not my complete expertise. And so we're standardizing on Cisco at our switch layer. And actually this coming year, I'm thinking that we're going to go to an MPLS type of model, where we feed all of our data. It goes through a central point. Bigger districts like Memphis City Schools already do this. And one of my big concerns with that is just making sure that it's going to be redundant. So it's going to be interesting this summer trying to get that implemented. But as of right now, each campus has its own dedicated internet connection along with a redundant internet connection in case that main fiber connection goes down. and then it hits the sonic wall and it goes through the web filter. So we utilize Barracuda web filters internally at every school. That really gives us the granularity and the reporting. Whenever we need to go back through somebody's history to find something, that's where we go to do it. And then we use OpenDNS externally for our web filtering. And if you're noticing a pattern, I tend to want to be redundant with everything. I think that's a technical person's goal with anything they do is being redundant. So always having internal and external filtering, or, you know, making sure that we have extra switch ports that are available that aren't used. So if one goes down, we can just move things over. So we've got those two different properties handling our filtering internally and externally, and then the switching. And outside of that, our network closets, I try to keep them pretty lean. We do keep usually a Mac Mini server. That's what's at Gordon, that handles a lot of services like DHCP, DNS, NetBoot. A lot of the built-in services are turned on, and that's kind of how I manage things there. And at PowerCenter, they've been around for a little longer, and they've got a little bit more server infrastructure. They've got two now, quote unquote, outdated X serves. So I was sad to see those go away, because they're great machines, and they have all those redundancies built in, because they're server class equipment. So we are now utilizing Mac Minis to kind of do the same thing, and they work great. Although I try to keep their network load, or just the general load on those machines, at a lower level. So we host a lot of things out of PowerCenter as kind of our primary point of access. Like our Casper Suite instance is hosted through our Xservs over at PowerCenter. And I just recently made it internet accessible, which is great. And over the winter break, we reconnected. We touched every computer that scholars use to move them over to this new server, which was a ton of fun. But now they're all bound, and if they leave our network, they can still kind of call home, if you will, which is really nice. So as far as the network closets go, they're pretty lean between the servers, the switches, the filters, and the firewalls. And then we utilize Jive Communications for our phone systems. So they're just a VoIP kind of plug and play. It's a hosted PBX, and it's a great system with a great interface that I don't have to worry about. We really try to keep as much as we can hosted outside of our closets. So that's really the only thing that's in the closet for the phones is the patch cables.
Yeah, that seems to be really the trend going forward. And it's not necessarily, I mean, when you say that, you know, switching is not necessarily your expertise, and I'm the same way. I mean, I can probably maybe talk my way out of a paper bag about, you know, switch technology, but it's like I've recognized what my strengths are, and that's not it. And it's probably never going to be it. And so it's easier for me just to outsource that.
Yep.
Rather than, you know, it's not even like you got to hire another staff member. It's like you can just partner with a technology company in your local area and say, all right, you buy our switches, you put them in, you install them, you set them up the way that is most efficient, and if I have problems, I will call you. And it's kind of those turnkey solutions that, you know, that if it's not your expertise, don't fool with it. Just know what, especially on a lean staff, know what your strengths are, and then you handle that stuff. So, like, I consider my strengths to be, you know, Mac and wireless. And so anything to do with our Mac or iOS or if our wireless infrastructure, I handle it all. Anything past that, if I get stuck, I'll just call somebody. Rather than spend 2 weeks trying to research an issue, I just pay somebody, you know, 2 hours for them to fix it.
Yeah, totally. Plus, it's worth whatever it costs for those 2 hours to not be beating your head against the wall for 10 hours trying to figure the same thing out, which I have done in the past whenever I was being too stubborn.
Yeah, you just look at, we figure out what your cost per hour is, and if it's going to take you 10 hours to fix it, but it can take someone else an hour and a half or 2 hours or even 3 hours, and then you look at what other things you could be doing or who else is not being served while you're spending those 10 hours researching a routing issue, you know, it just makes sense to bring in a vendor for those kind of situations. So we'll stop real quick and take a quick sponsor break. I want to thank MindVault. They're back again this week. MindVaultApp.com. It's your personal memorization assistant. It allows you to memorize any passage of text. So a couple things you could memorize. It'd be anything, but some suggestions. If you're studying for a play, studying for a test, trying to memorize some quotes, debate material, scriptures, wedding vows, really anything you're trying to do, MindVault is what you want to use. MindVault focuses the mind and improves your ability to retain what really matters. You get started by entering the passage you want to memorize and then use the slider to let you test yourself as you recite the passage so you can kind of have it show you more or less. Pretty soon you'll have everything in your head memorized and you can keep using it to remember new things in the future. So it's a great app, mindvaultapp.com. It's also in the App Store. It's a universal app, so it's one price for iPhone and iPod Touch and iPad. So we'll have a link to the show notes to their website and in the App Store. Great for students. Also great for, if you're a technology person trying to study for a certification exam, also great for that. It's just a couple bucks in the App Store. We've had some listeners have tweeted me, said they bought it. So it's great. Again, I think right now the price is $2.99, so you'll spend more on lunch than you will on this app. So mindvaultapp.com, or we'll have a link in the show notes as well. So thanks to them for sponsoring the show this week. So what kind of software do you guys use? You talked about using the Casper suite, on the actual machines for your teachers and your students. Is there any extra software that you're installing that you guys are utilizing?
Yes, although in every aspect possible, we are kind of moving away from local software where we can, because so much is moving to the web. So for the most part, we've got our base OS image, and then on top of that, we will install Office, and that is heavily utilized because business and entrepreneurship is kind of part of the foundation of our entire network because of where we came from and where PowerCenter started. So Office is still, one of those staples for working in business and in the business world. So Office is definitely there. Outside of that, we've got Remote Desktop and then the iLife suite of tools. We've got a lot of our scholars utilize GarageBand. A lot of the projects that our scholars are called to do for business and things like that require them to create their own media. So they'll use iMovie and a lot of the built-in tools that come with the Mac. I'm trying to think exactly software-wise. The downfalls of having the Casper suite is that I don't keep a mental inventory of software the way I used to, because there's this tool called Self-Service where it's basically your own internal app store. And once I package up software and put it in there, all I have to do is scope it to who's allowed to have it. So it's kind of like a set it and forget it with the exception of updates. So I'm trying to think through the other pieces that we have because we have migrated so much to the web, and PowerCenter even started utilizing the web so much with the Google suite of apps. We've been a Google Apps school since the PowerCenter opened, I have a question for you about the Google certification you have. I was kind of wondering if you could just give a summing up of what that looks like, because I haven't gone through anything with Google.
It was pretty easy. I mean, you do it all from your comfort of your own desk. It was like $90 for every exam. I think there were 6 or 7 exams at the time. So you're a Google certified trainer. So you have to take exams on like Gmail, Google Calendar, the Google Apps management interface and things like that. It really wasn't bad considering they're open book exams. So you can technically Google the answers. And it's not always easy to find them. And then because a lot of them are like specific, you kind of have to delve into the settings, but it wasn't too bad. I mean, I've not really done much with it, but I figured it was a $90 certification that I could take at the convenience of my own desk. And so I just took it. And again, you get access to some like training material, documentation and things like that. And you get access to a Google group of all the other certified trainers, but it's not bad. I mean, again, for $90, you kind of can't beat it.
Okay. Yeah. I've been interested in that because we're actually thinking about, implementing Chromebooks in certain ways, or at least piloting them to see where they could be used, because we're getting ready to start going into elementary, because as of right now, we're just 6th grade through 10th grade, but we will be K through 12 within about 4 or 5 years. And I'm trying to see if the Chromebook has a place at the elementary level, and with that will come kind of even more buy-in to the Google world universe. So I didn't know if that certification was something that really helped a lot with understanding kind of management of Google in any ways outside of what you can kind of find online or not.
No, I mean, not so much. I don't know that I necessarily learned a whole lot from it, but it's just something else you can, I guess, stick on your wall or your LinkedIn profile.
Yeah.
No, I do. I think the Chromebooks have a unique opportunity in education. I think that's, if you're really, you know, heavy into Google Apps, it's a great device. You know, and I was actually at a meeting this morning. It was a company, they offered some web-based curriculum supplements. And I was talking to my headmaster about it afterwards. He said, kind of said, what do you think about it? You know, is this something that we would ever even look at? And I said, well, so here's the problem with a lot of these services. Because it's great that everything is moving web-based, because it makes... it's a turnkey installation. Like, you just give them a credit card and then they provision you a set of users. But the problem is, like, in your situation, so, like, you know, you've got hundreds and hundreds of users. So if they don't have anything, a way to, like, you know, automatically sync with Google Apps to get your accounts, you're sitting there making all these accounts, or the students are expected to make their own accounts. And that's just a lot. It's kind of like the login problem. I go to these conferences, and they had these classes on Web 2.0 tools in the classroom, but every one of them has, like, their own login. So am I supposed to, like, make, you know, school-wide 15 different apps and then make logins for every student, and then they have to keep up with the passcodes?
Yeah, I've been in that world, and I'm lucky in the way we're positioned. But I remember doing that last year. Again, when I say last year, I'm actually pointing at 2010 to 2011. That's kind of my last year before we got a lot of things wrapped up into some great systems to help make my job and a lot of other people's jobs who would help with that easier. And so, I guess the answer to that might be single sign-on of some sort, which we have a learning management system that we've partnered with a company called EdElements to build. And what's great about that is if any provider or service will work with a SAML-based single sign-on, you can go ahead and tie it in. So our scholars, their landing point for the day, they start in the learning management system, they log in, and then they've got multiple content providers, I think typically between 5, sometimes higher than that, but at least 5 content providers they can jump into for different content, you know, video-based content. A lot of Flash-based content still exists, which is one of those things that's making it hard for me to push the iPad in any way, because a lot of those providers are still using Flash. But the single sign-on is great because it will also populate whatever providers are built in. So, or not built in, rather, but that have been hooked in by the engineers at somewhere like EdElements. And I don't know that much about single sign-on other than the amount of help it's given me, because it allows everybody to log in once and then they're done. They just kind of jump off from that landing page, if you will, to wherever they need to go. And that even includes our help desk. We use SamManage for our help desk and our asset management system. And everything that I'm kind of referring to is all hosted out there by somebody else, usually on Amazon's web services. And it's just been so helpful to accomplish that goal that you were just talking about of manually managing hundreds upon hundreds of user accounts.
Yeah, it just doesn't scale when you've got even a school above 100 kids. It just doesn't scale. And that's, you know, we use RenWebs for our student information system. And, like, I know they partnered with Moodle as a learning management system provider. And so, like, we would be intently more, you know, keen to use Moodle for something just because it would already be hooked in. Or if there was one that hooked into Google Apps, we would, you know, look at that first. It's just because it really becomes a turnkey installation. Like we, one of our fifth grade teachers, kind of as homework assigns students to use Khan Academy. Well, we provide our fifth graders with Google Apps accounts that only can work internally, only internal for email, but they can obviously log in externally. But the main reason we give them Google Apps accounts is so they can use Khan Academy because it allows either a Google or a Facebook sign in. And so then they can designate their teacher's email address as their email address, and then they're off for the races. So it's just, it seems, it's like, 10 years ago, it was all about Active Directory integration. And Active Directory, and for schools especially, doesn't seem to be used as much anymore, especially in a world driven by iPads that you don't really have a need for it as much. And so it's like we've had nothing to replace that, and we've had these rise of web services that every one of them has their own login. And so it's just kind of a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. The login management, I think somebody stands to make a lot of money if they come along and they gear themselves to build kind of a landing page, a single sign-on geared towards education, and they make the deals with all the different web-based companies that kind of have those things, and they bring everything together, because that's what Ed Elements does for us. But there's a lot of manual labor involved by people way smarter than me that know how to, establish a single sign-on connection and do all of that work. And if somebody could bring a, like, if this, then that type of model to single sign-on, I think there's a lot of money out there to be gained.
No, I agree. And it'd almost be like a web-based app store for education. It's like you create the accounts one time, and it's like, okay, so you got this third grade class wants to use spellingcity.com, for example. Well, you just like click and drag and say, give these students access to this. And then, then you could just pay for it right there on the spot. No, I agree. That's a huge opportunity. So if anybody creates that for listening to the show, they need to sponsor the show after that. But yes. No, it's just, I just don't see us going back to an Active Directory model. And we're like you guys, where we look to hosted first, just because I don't have the time to babysit network resources. I just need that stuff to work. And I'm one guy to, a school of 300 students and then, probably 50 or 60 staff members. I just don't have the time to deal with stuff like that. I need to be able to buy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally understand. And it seems to me like, the trend in education is to keep the IT department lean, even though there are management issues like that sometimes are just a nightmare, and it can actually kind of force your decisions on how you implement and utilize different services, because you don't have the headcount to kind of help make sure things get done. You don't have the team. Right now I'm flying solo, so I'm supporting roughly 1,000 people myself.
I don't really know how you're doing that. I mean, obviously that really just means you pick good vendors that can help you do stuff.
Yeah, and actually I misspoke. 1,000 people is too much. Right? We're at about 800, 900 people. With our CMO and all the staff, but it's crazy. And we're, one of our challenges is, we are not a single school that's going to stay a single school. We are a network of schools with three schools at this moment, but we are scaling to where we're going to have 10 schools within the next 4 years. And we're going to be serving 5,300 scholars within that time frame. So a lot of this is kind of the trajectory that we're facing, and how do we pivot when needed with technology, and how do we make it something that's cost feasible? So I totally understand the being lean piece and managing so much by yourself, or even no matter what, with a small team, because if you overdo it with your team, you will collapse.
As you'd mentioned, you're at three schools now and you're growing to 10. How does your role change with that? Are you looking to hire more people and you become like the CIO of the organization, and you have a staff that is actually, located at the schools? How do you fit into the growth plans?
So I am flying solo just right now. I haven't been for most of this school year. I've had another person, but for right now, I'm solo, and we are hiring right now, and we're getting ready to ramp up and at least have two people that work with me to support the schools. But our model and what has actually worked pretty well for us, again, this being our first year with two separate buildings to travel to and support, is kind of having experts within the building, just general faculty that are technically inclined and take the ownership. We've got that at every school. And a lot of times we don't even converse with them. They're taking care of things without being asked. But for the most part, we've got an IT support specialist that covers two schools. And their schedule kind of allows them to be there. Let's say they were at Power Center on Mondays and Thursdays, and then they are at Gordon Tuesdays and Fridays, and Wednesday is kind of their office day because we do a lot of things internally, like our repairs. So we're self-servicing, you know, Apple, I don't know what they call it with education. It's called a service provider with a business.
Self-servicing account.
Okay. Yeah. So that's what we're doing. That, by the way, that took us like 9 months to establish that account. I don't know if you've done that before, but it's a lot of paperwork back and forth between Apple and you.
Yeah. I actually printed that manual out and I think I used a whole ream of paper. And of course it's not a cheap certification either. If you, I mean, I took the class. I guess you can just go take the exams, but I wasn't smart enough to do that. I took the hardware class. I didn't take the software class, but even in your situation, I mean, certainly even in our situation with, you know, a much lower number of devices, it makes sense to not, you know, to not send the repairs out. And certainly with you guys, I mean, you can get to where you could have a full-time repair guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we definitely could. It really depends on skill set. I mean, my background, I worked at Apple in the retail stores for about 2.5 years before I went to the consulting group, and the consulting group was an Apple authorized service provider. So I've just carried my certifications, and I've been doing it long enough that there are certain machines in particular that I could probably do with my eyes closed. But it kind of depends on your background and how quickly you can turn those around. The other thing is just, typically, when we're repairing something, it's actually, if anything, damage. And it's on a low enough level that it hasn't affected us that badly. We maybe bring in 10 to 20 machines a week between warranty and non-warranty work. But that amount of work with 5,300 scholars to support would be crazy, plus the staff. That doesn't include staff. And I don't know what that number would look like, but that's one of the reasons that we're trying to figure out what's going to be the best solution. Is one-to-one going to be the best thing for us because of the financial implications and the amount of work it takes to support it? Or are we going to be able to find ways to kind of see the steady growth with maybe less devices, or just different devices, maybe for the cost reasons? Go ahead.
Those repairs can get time consuming. I mean, even a hard drive swap, when you consider the time to migrate data and whatnot, you can spend a couple hours on that. And if you don't have a large staff and you're spending, you know, an hour and a half with data migration on replacing a hard drive, that can eat up a good portion of your day.
Yeah. I guess we circumvent that by using networked accounts. So all of our data syncs back, the scholar's home folder or staff member's home folder, they just sign into a networked account. So we're using Open Directory within the schools, which has worked quite well for us. And then it syncs up. But one of the things I've been told recently by actually an Apple engineer was, stop using networked accounts. I don't know how much longer that'll be a supported thing. So I'm wondering when the day is going to come that we don't have that luxury, and that data migrations or some of the other challenges that come with not being networked. I'm wondering when that's going to hit us.
Yeah, we have never done that with our with any of our teachers. It's always been local accounts, and that we give them a Time Machine backup drive, and then it's kind of like they're supposed to back it up. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't. It just feels like it, as home folders can probably continue to grow as you get students with more and more media, it's just hard to get that synced back to a network server. And because I don't know if something with the growth of iCloud will make the need for a network server, you know, gone. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. But it never felt like in recent years that it kind of mattered as much to Apple.
No, it definitely doesn't seem like – it seems like, especially the server product, they've shifted focus away from it, or they've lost a lot of interest. I would hope that would come back, but I can't rely on that. So actually that's making me make some decisions with our server infrastructure, going forward, that we might actually be, we might be going to Active Directory, even though you just said we typically don't, we actually might be moving towards it because of the way we're trying to scale things.
Yeah, I actually, I think I mentioned on previous podcasts, I moonlight for, you know, we're Brainerd Baptist School, and then so we're part of Brainerd Baptist Church, and I moonlight for the church doing their IT on the side, and it's pretty much all Macs, and they don't have as many staff members, so it's not too bad. But they're implementing a new check-in procedure on Sundays for the children's ministry, and the software that they're using, it's hooked into the church management system, and so it is Mac compatible, but it requires a scanner. And in our experiences, we found that their Mac software is not does not work as well with scanners for whatever reason. It's not the Mac; it's actually their software. So we decided to go with Lenovo laptops. I just called my PC vendor up in Nashville, and I said, "Hey, I need 10 Lenovo ThinkPads, with these kind of specs." He sent me a price. I said, "Okay, order them." And I have not worked on Windows really in years. And so I get the thing out of the box. It's Windows 7. And it's pretty easy. I mean, I don't have to install much on it. It doesn't even need Office. All it needs is literally one piece of software. And I thought, well, I'm going to do my due diligence and update the machine first. And literally an out-of-the-box Windows 7 computer is failing on Windows updates. And it just makes me sad. And I've been working on this one machine for like a week. And I have like 9 more to do after it. And the next one seems to be going much better. I pulled out the second one and started the update process before the show started. And it's just like, what planet does like an out-of-the-box computer have problems with updates? Like literally nothing was on the computer.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I've run my own side business since I was in high school, supporting clients of my own. So I've got some clients around the Memphis area that I take care of, and they are PC. It's a real estate company, and a lawyer's office. And if I open up a new machine, like I converted one of our clients about a year ago, it was Windows 7. Just what was staggering to me was the amount of updates right out of the box. And it would do a reboot, and then there'd be a whole nother slew of updates. And that cycle happened maybe 3 or 4 times.
Well, with Apple, if you take a machine and put it on 10.6 today, for whatever reason you wiped it, the first update will take you straight to 10.6.8. It's a combo update, and it's kind of slipstreams them all together, and so it's just one big reboot. And the max you'll have is 2. And I guess it's really fundamentally how Windows is made. They can't do that, because it is very frustrating to get a machine that's out of the box and it has, that many updates, 4 cycles of updates.
Yeah, it's crazy, and it's time consuming. And a lot of the work I do is after hours. I grab keys and go into the building when there aren't people there. But I think if my clients were looking at me, they'd be like, this is really what you're going to spend your time doing, and you're going to bill me for it. That's kind of what comes with the territory.
Yeah, I really like, I do, I think probably every IT guy does. I do side work as well. And I really don't even work on PCs anymore. I just tell people I don't work on them, because it's just, and what I found too, especially like with home users, I'm not going to go spend 3 hours of my time for $25. And so like I charge where it makes sense for my time, for me to spend my nights away from my family. And I found like, if I want to try to charge, if they've got a dead hard drive and I want to try to charge them $300 to replace it and migrate all their data back, which really to me is like what my time should be worth in some ways, because that's my time that should be at home, then they don't want to pay it because they probably only have $500 in the machine.
Yep.
Where a Mac, if you've got a Mac at home and they've got a MacBook Pro they spent $1,300 for, if I say, hey, it's going to be $300 for me to get this back up and running, they say, okay. They just say, because they got more invested in it.
Yep. Plus, a Mac user. It seems like I've got actually that lawyer's office. One of the lawyers, we've recently converted her over to a Mac. And I've tried to keep her. Her Dell PC is at least 10 years old. And I know somehow it's miraculously stayed alive this long. So I'm trying to get her to use her Mac for everything. One of her things she's having to do right now is she's got probably 20 years worth of WordPerfect documents. So she's having to convert them manually and copy them over to her Mac, because most of the WordPerfect conversion tools out there are crazy expensive. They're designed for firms that want to invest a ton of money to convert their whole office over to Word. And getting her to use her Mac, she would rather pay me to help her do that than she would go to the Apple store, which says a lot about what she's willing to deal with. And I think it says a little bit about what's available and kind of what the threshold is within the retail stores these days, for supporting things and for such a kind of specific niche type of setup. But yeah, your time's valuable, and people realize that. It seems that especially whenever you're supporting Macs, that's what I've found, because I had to raise my rate just because of how much work I had at work, at my day job, that giving up my nights meant I needed to make more money to make it justified.
Yeah. I make good money at my school and they provide for me very well, but I'm very busy. And so if I'm going to, I stay here till 5 o'clock at least every night. And if I'm going to go somewhere and stay there till 7:30 and be away from my family, it's going to have to be where it makes sense for, I'm in a luxury where I don't have to have the money. It's kind of extra money. So I'm just not going to do it for peanuts.
Yep. I mean, when I started doing client work, I was charging $25 an hour and I did the in-home stuff. And, I've seen some rough computers. But that is slowly, and gradually had to go up, to a point where I think it's fair now, because I know what we charged at our consulting group. And I'm not charging near that much. It's crazy how much money it can cost when you have a whole business to run. So you have to charge more. So I guess I have the luxury of kind of being a single person, getting to set my price low enough, but to me, it's actually pretty good money.
No, yeah, I agree. It's funny. We were talking before the show about that you and I talked probably, 6 months ago about Arrowhive. I think you guys were looking at them, and then and we spoke, and then I think you called me or I called you, and we were talking about it. And then I guess back in the fall, friend of the show, Stephen Hackett, him and I were meeting up for dinner. And then all of a sudden, I didn't know you guys were friends. So I thought that was Stephen is like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
He is. He definitely is.
He'll actually be on the show in February. Frazier will be back next week, and then he's going to take a few weeks off with the impending birth of his child. And so Stephen, we'll have some guest hosts, and Stephen's going to be one of those. We're going to kind of talk about Apple retail and Mac hardware repairs and things like that. But yeah, Stephen's a good friend of the show. So where can everybody find you on the internet if they want to see more about you personally?
So I have a personal website. I've recently revamped. I went to college for web design and web development, and my skills do not show it. But I've recently revamped thebigc.com. I have a very hard to pronounce. Mike Hurley I've sent him questions for Command Space, and he always pronounces it oddly. It's dabigc.com. It's a personal website. I am trying to write more. I don't know if you've ever run up against this with your own writing, but I've got about 6 drafts that are 3/4 of the way done, and I just haven't finished them or published them.
Well, yeah, it's because I read stuff and I think this is terrible. Nobody wants to read that, and I just trash it. So it's just, and of course, I know everybody feels that way, but it's like I would rather have no post than terrible post.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's my personal website. It hasn't been updated. I'll try to publish some more things to it. Some of those drafts just need to be finished off. But I try to use the Big C as kind of my pseudonym online. It's an easy way. If people search that, they're going to find me. If you search Cole Conrad, you're going to find this big, huge wrestler guy who retired a couple years ago. And his last name starts with a K, but he still comes up first. So... the Big C on Twitter, app.net, really any social service, I try to claim that thing.
Yeah, if I can't get my name, I just won't sign up. The only exception is LinkedIn, because I don't feel like the username matters as much. I have Chambers Bradley. But yeah, it's like, if I can't have Bradley Chambers, I'm just not signing up. I don't know. That's a pet peeve of mine.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for being on the show. It's a lot of fun. I'll have links to... all of Cole's Twitter account and his website and his app.net account in the show notes. And so if you use a podcast client other than the one from Apple on the iPhone, you'll see actually links in the show note. And I know on Apple's podcast app, they don't make those links active. So you can go to outofschool.net to see that. Thanks to our sponsor, MindVault. Back again this week, mindvaultapp.com. If you're trying to memorize anything, it's really the app you need. It's just a couple of bucks in the app store. Noah Reed is the developer. Great guy. I'll have a link to his Twitter account in the show notes as well. He's a great guy to follow on Twitter and app.net. So anything else before we go, Cole?
No, thanks a lot for having me. Like I said before we got started, this is my first time podcasting, so I hope I didn't... talk too much.
Well, it's funny. I've got a friend, Casey Less, who just started a new podcast with John Syracuse and Marco Arment, which they
neutral.
Are, you know, very, yeah, Neutral is the podcast. And we'll have a link for that in the show notes. And so Casey and I are our Twitter buddies. And I said, hey, man, that's great. And subscribed immediately. And he said, well, I feel like a newbie. He said, unlike you. I said, hey, man, I've done like 20 episodes. It's like, we're all newbies at this. We're really just staring into mics and these are really just phone conversations that we happen to record, and apparently a few people must find something good out of them or they wouldn't listen. But yeah, it's kind of terrifying podcasting, because especially in the South, we have those Southern drawls that just sound crazy outside of the South.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate the show. I'm definitely an avid listener, and your work is definitely well appreciated.
Well, thanks. Again, check out the show notes, outofschool.net, and we'll be back next week. Have a good week, everybody.
Bye.